This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS. Take home your copy of the PCGS Periodic Table of U.S. Coins poster, featuring high-resolution images of virtually all coins minted for circulation by the United States, available only on Amazon.com. Will a woman finally replace Andrew Jackson on the 20? A recent announcement from Treasury Secretary Jack Lew points to yes, but obstacles remain. We reach out to Women on 20's founder, Barbara Ortiz Howard, to get her take on how far the movement has come next on the Coin Week podcast. Hi, Barbara. You founded Women on 20s, which has come into national prominence for your advocacy for replacing Andrew Jackson on the $20 Federal Reserve note with an important female figure from U.S. history. When did you start this journey?
Our campaign was launched in February of 2015 with an introduction of the 15 candidates we were asking the public to select among to have as in a final run, election to have as the final selection for the $20 bill. So, but the actual voting began March 1st, 2015 to coincide with National Women's History Month. And the campaign ran from March through April 6th. That was like the first phase of it. And then the second phase of it ended in early May, 5 weeks later, and Harriet Tubman emerged as the winner of the entire campaign.
Many of our listeners may not be familiar with all the figures on your list of 15, and there are various reasons for that. But how hard was it to narrow down the list of deserving American women down to the 15 women that the American public saw when you rolled out this campaign in 2015?
That's a great question, because it was extremely difficult to narrow it down. We started with a list of over 100 names, and we went out to a knowledge base of people, historians, authors, women leaders in the area of women's rights. And we asked them to evaluate the candidates on a scale of their contribution, the impact of their contribution to society on a scale of 1 to 10, and then again on a scale of how much difficulty did they have in achieving those goals. So we weighted the first impact on society twice to the level of difficulty, so someone could get a maximum score, let's say, of 30, and then, like, you know, two-tens, twice as much for the impact. So we then came up with the top 60, and we reevaluated, and then when we got to 30, we had them ranked the top 15 of those 30. So it was an iterative process, and it took some time to get through that.
Were there any figures on your initial rolls that you really had hoped would make it but didn't make the final cut?
What we noticed was that the top three candidates, Harriet Tubman, Eleanor Roosevelt, Rosa Parks, were followed in pretty short order by a number of suffragists who are not as well known, you know, not as contemporary. Well, Harriet Tubman was not contemporary, but certainly not as well known to the general public. So that I think the order was Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Sojourner Truth, and those three followed the top three, and then we had Alice Paul, another suffragist, even quite a bit further down in the voting. So it seemed like people just didn't know the suffragists. And considering that Much of this effort in the beginning was to draw attention to 2020 being the centennial of when women were finally included in our democracy. It was very telling and something that a story that still needs to be told of the effort that women had to go through, the long, arduous process that they had to go through in order to get women the right to vote and many other rights, such as the right to have an education and own property, to work outside the home, and of course, the right to vote.
You know, another thing that's interesting, if you think about the allegorical representation of women, when you see these allegorical representations of a female liberty, it originated at a time and persisted at a time when women essentially had no liberty whatsoever in this country. And it amazes me when you think about the use of this iconography and whether or not people at the time found a sort of irony to it, you know, when the government was putting this out. It's like when we were used to have coins and currency with Native American imagery at the same time we were fighting the Indian Wars in the American West.
Yeah, it's very curious, isn't it? One is more perhaps, you know, realistic, or the conquering of there are currency that have representations of slave on it, especially in Confederate currency, I understand. So people bristle, sometimes have bristles of, well, why would you want to put someone like Harriet Tubman, who was a victim of all of that, on the currency? And I think that it represents a triumph over it rather than being shackled by it. So, and the important message that she is, talk about someone who represents some of our deep values, liberty and freedom, that she would certainly be a great representative of that. So it is curious, though, why we would have someone who looks so unattainable, like that is some ideal that a woman would never reach. And that's kind of not unlike what we see in a lot of our media depiction of women that are digitized and enhanced digitally to be something that nobody could ever look like.
Well, obviously, your organization has garnered a lot of media attention and support from Americans who participated in your survey and promoted you on social media. But did you receive any pushback for the idea?
Well, there is always going to be pushback when you are suggesting change. And that pushback could come in a variety of ways. Some people, why fix something that isn't broken? It's not a true representation of our history. You know, people say, well, are you trying to rewrite history? Are you trying to change history? No, we're just trying to make it be more inclusive than it has been. It's been pretty much a boys' club all this time, and that's why the vast majority of people do not know who put their lives on the line and dedicated their lives to getting women the right to vote. Women
right.
that were incarcerated and beaten and died to get women the right to vote. They're not recognized in a very common way, and they're not, you know, spoken about in history classes around the country.
Well, you know, it's probably just a coincidence, but, you know, I've always found it highly curious that the Susan B. Anthony dollar disappeared at about the same time that the Equal Rights Amendment was also sidetracked.
Well, you know, it's a very curious thing as to how that all evolved, how that decision was made to make a coin that was disliked, was annoyance, because
right.
it looked like a quarter. It was easily confused. And so instead of being a tribute, it became problematic. And there was also a movement in the 70s in Congress to have Susan B. Anthony on the $2 bill.
Okay.
And had bipartisan support, from what I understand. It also had state support. A lot of states signed on. Governors signed on to it. But it was not, it didn't go anywhere. And I'm not sure why, except that people say, oh, you know, women can wait. Like they waited for the right to vote. They'll wait for representation. And then, so that's the one thing people say, you know, you're trying to change the story and you're trying to defame Hamilton or Jackson. Well, it's not really that. Their legacies speak for themselves. We know exactly who they are. We just choose to speak about it or not. On the other hand, we don't speak about any of our women in such a broad manner. Another comment is that people say, well, it's not significant. You know, it's not, that's not important. There are other more important things for us to focus on. And certainly we have some very big challenges ahead of us if we're going to survive as a, you know, civilization. But this is important because we will need to open the door and provide this projection that women can achieve and have achieved great things in our mainstream culture.
I was going to ask you about your thoughts about what Secretary Liu said over the weekend, but first I wanted to point out something I found interesting. I see in some circles when talking about Jackson that the discussion of replacing Jackson or choosing Jackson over Hamilton, it seems that Hamilton now has become sort of a cultural darling due to the popular Broadway musical about him, although I don't know how much that resonates outside of New York. But Jackson hated the banking system. He hated paper money. He was kind of a bit of a bad guy in many ways. So I see some people rationalizing about the change, and it's almost as if they're thinking, well, if we have to get rid of somebody, let's not do Hamilton, but Jackson. It's as if to say that if a woman was to ascend to take the place of somebody else on our currency, that this is only possible in an instance where there's a bad male that doesn't deserve to be there anymore.
There's one spot that could be available, you know? And that's what I'm hoping that actually... And this is relates to kind of what the kind of the vacillation here and shifting of what might happen. But why couldn't a woman appear on the front side of the tent with Hamilton? Because he was more of a visionary person. He wasn't at the time in favor of women's voting rights, for example, but if he were, you know, if we take him to our modern day today, he would have evolved to be a feminist and say, no, she shouldn't be just relegated to the back of the bill. And that would be her representation, and that's how we're going to honor women for their centennial of suffrage. No, I think he would be like, let's usher in a new era of gender equality starting with me. Starting here on this bill, let's show the world that men and women both deserve the same billing. And but at the same time, so that it doesn't appear that women must appear with a male, that, you know, because there's seven denominations and George and Benjamin Franklin are going to remain on those denominations for some time to come. Namely, he's spent so much money making that 100, and I think Congress has passed some law that you can't change the one. It's never undergone any redesign. So, assuming that there's even fewer bills, five bills, not seven, that can be, you know, shared. Why can't women have a denomination of their own, a woman's specific denomination, to really celebrate and commemorate their contributions? And so that people can remember 1920, all this. It's very important. And it should be, as you know, one of those dates that is etched in our history, much like 1776 and other very landmark dates.
So what contact has your organization had with the Treasury, and how have they responded?
Well, initially we were, invited to the announcement, and we met with them, beforehand with the staffers and actually, from the White House and also from the Treasury, including, Treasurer, Rosie Rios, who, the BEP falls under her, authority, as does the, Counterfeiting Committee. That's a committee that she chairs. So we met with them and they pronounced their idea, and we were taken aback because we had processed that. It was very little information that's the direction they were going in and that they would be making that announcement. So it took us kind of by surprise, and we were thinking, gee, we want to have this, we want to have women on 20s. We're not women on 10s. We'd like to see a woman on 20s, not half of that denomination. The denomination actually is not used even, a quarter as often as the 20. And then we're going to have half of that. And now we're going to have half of a half of a half. In a way, or even less, because we're saying we're going to share the back end of the vignette, which, by the way, IAC Commission, our organization exists with really two people. no, but we have a lot of friends. We commissioned a mural of suffragists, women who are vital to that effort, and we put that on the back of our proposed 20 with Harriet Tubman. And now that has been lifted, as I don't know that they'll use the same 13 or 12 people that we had. We even included a male in there, Frederick Douglass, because he was a great supporter at the time. But we didn't mean that to be a standalone.
Right.
Or the only means of which to honor women. So for us, it was this latest revelation that this is how they are leaning to maintain Hamilton on the front and offer this the back of the 10 and probably the back of the 5, and then again the front of the 20 in 2030 when we have many more administrations ahead and many more trials and tribulations, and who knows what happens to our, country and who's running it and what their predilections are. So, many things can happen between now and then. So it certainly has no connection with 2020.
Now, Barbara, I have another question, and I feel a little uneasy asking this. But what happens if and when these newly designed notes come into existence and enter circulation, if someone or some group of people who don't agree with this change decide to deface the notes with inflammatory comments or images and circulate them? I mean, does this possibility concern you?
I had somebody, some really awful picture, and you've just kind of wasted $20.
Well, the Bank of Canada ran into this, but kind of in a humorous way, when clever vandals defaced the $5 bill depicting Sir Wilfrid Laurier, who looks an awful lot like the late actor Leonard Nimoy. And so they took Sharpies and added Vulcan eyebrows and sideburns and ears. It's innocent enough, but the government started to ask people to stop doing this, and it only made the issue worse. Ultimately, it seemed that the best course of action was just to let the matter run its course. But Canada doesn't have nearly the same level of gender or racial issues on the fringes that we have in the United States. And if the Treasury puts out a note honoring Harriet Tubman or Rosa Parks, that I would think that some pretty horrifying things could end up being scrawled on these notes and circulated around.
I mean, it would be we have people that are small-minded and take out their frustrations in unfortunate ways And there will probably be some people who think that this is a good way to get back at someone else for whatever. But then there are people like this artist that contacted us early in March, Jan Luton, who is a French man, and I will try to send you a picture. I have to separate it from others, but he was very inspired by our campaign. And he was also very inspired. He's French and lives in Belgium. And he was very inspired by Harriet Tubman, whom he had not known. And he normally makes, he does have a series of artwork that he does do called Outsized Artifacts. And he has done bills, but existing bills of in different countries. And but he decided to make a very large, very oversized painting sculpture of a $20 bill with Harriet Tubman on it. And it's exquisite and it's beautiful. He sent it to us, and he sent us this touching letter of how he was moved to do this creation, and then we put her on it. And it's a very carefully done. It's kind of folded over and done as if it had existed since the 80s. It's a worn bill and folded over and has creases, and it's just a lot of great detail. And it was showing in New York at the New York Affordable Art Show, and it was being sent over in a gallery with a gallery owner. And I said, "John, you know, you really need to come because you're so part of this artwork. We really would love to meet you." If I don't know if I can come, and it's not my budget. And they called me back and said, "You know, I've talked with my wife and my children, and they said I should come, so I'm coming with Miss Tubman." And then what happened? Brussels was bombed. And I was like, "Oh my God," you know, and I sent them the note, and "Are you all right?" And "Yes, they're fine," but they're in shock. And a couple of days went by, and I said, "Well, I'm still coming, you know." And I was surprised, you know, because we've been there, as New Yorkers, we've been there, having experienced 9/11 and that feeling of, you know, really hunkering down and really closing ranks and circling around our wagons, you know, to try and feel safe and, you know, not wanting to leave our families at that point after having had some scary, you know, times there. And he was so brave. So that's wonderful. So happy. And he wound up having, because the airport was closed, he wound up having to take a bus from Brussels to Frankfurt. And he missed his flight because they didn't calculate how long that would take. So then he found another flight. He was considering, "Oh, this isn't really working out. Maybe I shouldn't come." You know, people are going to have that thought. You know, this is not a good sign. And he found another flight, and he came. And he had to be one of the most jet-lagged people ever. And he had such a small time in New York. You know, he was, like, here for a day and a half. And we were sitting down. I said, "Let's have something to eat." He's like, "But it's 2 o'clock in the morning," or something. It was tough for him, but, you know, so while there may be people who would, you know, deface or mock, you know, the person that we've chosen, or, you know, that it ultimately gets chosen, there are going to be people who are lifted up, and I hope there's far many more people that are inspired and lifted up to be more courageous and to really want to strive for freedom and the best that they can be. So that's what I'm really hoping that can achieve.
So Barbara, thank you very much sincerely for giving us a few minutes of your time and also taking up the challenge to make a change to our country and our money. I look forward to the day when I get to spend a $20 bill featuring one of America's important women. And hey, when I do that, I'll have you to thank.
Well, thank you so much, Charles, for your support and interest. I know that you've been following the story. I found it, your article amusing, the boys keep swinging. It's quite, that's a good one.
And that does it for this episode of the Coin Week podcast. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends. You can also download our complete back catalog of podcasts on the iTunes store. For Coin Week, I'm Coin Week editor Charles Morgan, signing off. Happy collecting.